Chapter 9. The Evening Sermon. The Evening Sermon was one of the regular series of expositions of the evils of religious legislation by Elder A.T. Jones, who in opening said, "Tonight the subject is the powers that be and the limitation upon them. I call attention to Romans chapter 13, verse 1, assenting the powers that be to be ordained of God." This is a comment on Matthew chapter 22, verse 21, referred to last night. "Render unto Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and to God the things that are God's." By this expression, the Savior recognized that those are things due civil government, but he did not define the limitation. Yet Paul does so. I will refer briefly to some portions of the chapter. The question before the Savior was the matter of tribute. So Paul speaks of the same rendering tribute to whom tribute is due. "Let every soul be subject unto the higher powers." Titus chapter 3 verses 1 and 2 tells us to be subject to powers, to obey magistrates, etc. 1 Timothy chapter 2 verses 1 to 4 admonishes us to pray for such officers. 1 Peter chapter 2 verses 13 to 17 urges us to submit ourselves to ordinances that we may be examples of well-doing to others. But do these scriptures embrace everything, or is there a limit to it? Shall we obey when the commands are contrary to the precepts of God? Turn to Acts chapter 4, verses 17 to 20, and we find then when the apostles, Peter and John, were brought before the Jewish council and forbidden to preach Christ. They answered, "Whether it be better to hearken to thee and not to God, judge ye." Now verse 21, compared with chapter 5, verses 28 and 29, shows that when they were released, they went at once to teaching, and performing miracles, were again arrested, and when asked if they had not been forbidden to teach, answered, "We ought to obey God rather than men." Very well, then the power given to the government is limited, and when it conflicts with the commands of God, it is not to be obeyed. Turning back to Romans chapter 13 from verse 7 onward, we find this, that the limits of power of government is defined. Paul knew that there were 10 commandments, yet after quoting 5 of them, he says, "If there be any other commandment, it is briefly comprehended in this saying, namely, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself." He knew there were 4 others defining our love to God, summed up in this, "Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, and with all thy might." Now why did he not mention these 4? Because he was writing on the powers that be, and that which pertains to the relations of man to his neighbor, and that governments cannot go beyond this limit. This is civil government, just as I defined it last night. The Lord, then, has set this limitation on civil government. Thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. Now, if we remember what Paul is writing about, we see why the first 4 commandments are not mentioned, because they pertain to our allegiance to God and have nothing to do with our duty towards civil government, and no government has a right to interfere with our duty to God. Paul is defining the limits of temporal power, and if a Christian obeys the commands of God, Caesar will never have a fault to find with him. For Paul is writing to the Christian church at Rome, remember, and not to the government. So all Caesar would have to do with such a people would be to collect the tribute. The Constitution of the United States recognizes this principle. In Jeremiah, we find that Nebuchadnezzar was raised up by the Lord to destroy Jerusalem and take the Israelites captives in Babylon for 70 years at the commandment of the Lord. Numbers chapter 3, verses 26 to 29 shows that the Lord promises the Chaldeans shall take Jerusalem and carry the people captive. There are abundant evidences of all this. Now then, this king had been made the power to the children of Israel by the Lord himself. Yet when this same king tried to force the brothers of Daniel to worship an image of his creation, and upon their refusal were cast into the burning fire, yet the Lord himself rescued them. If then the government, represented here by the king, was to be obeyed in all things because ordained by God, why did the Lord rescue those who disobeyed, standing by them and sanctifying their disobedience? Is it not because the limit of the powers he has confined in many relations to his neighbor? But now let me turn to another phase found in the third commandment, embodied in states forbidding the violation of this commandment. Now when the Lord tells us not to do a thing, the only safe way is to obey, unquestionably. No power, then, can legislate on the third commandment. Yet in opposing such legislation, it looks as though we were favoring blasphemy and sanctioning it. Blasphemy is wrong in every phase of it, but it is a wrong that civil government can have nothing to do with, without involving other evils and opening the way for oppression and despotism. If governments can legislate on one commandment, why cannot it legislate on all, and usurp all the privileges of God, establishing a theocracy on earth, and shutting out God entirely? Legislation against murder, theft, and other crimes are not based upon the commandments of God. Nations legislated on such crimes before the commandments were known to them. Civil governments legislate on these matters independent of and without reference to the commandments. It is inherent in man to protect himself and his family against criminal attack. Enactments against crime grow out of man's relation to his neighbor, and not because the principles are defined in the commandments and are not enforced as commandments of God, because it would force governments to go into the thoughts of man. Tomorrow night I shall consider the statutes against blasphemy.